Today's show is brought to you by the Star City Murders, the new serial killer thriller now streaming on Tubi.
Yes, Axel, my film. We're on Tubi now. Directed by Giles Andrews, starring myself, Heath Sentazzo, Tim Russ, Michelle Lukes, Austin Highsmith Garces, among many other greats. We have a new home. Now, you can still get it on Amazon, Apple, Vudu to rent or buy, but now for free, you can stream on Tubi and actually, Axel, Sling TV as well.
Nice. We just did it the other day. It's super simple. If you don't see it on the home screen, just search Star City. It'll come right up. You'll be watching it for free. And Tubi, there's some ad breaks, but they did great ad breaks. It's like it was made for it. So stream it now. The Star City Murders, baby.
And press like that you liked it. It'll help. Thank you.
Welcome back, everyone, to Podcast Winterfell. We have reached the end. We're here to talk about Season 2, Episode 8 of House of the Dragon, entitled The Queen Whoever Was. That's right. We've reached the end, the finale. You can find out more about us at dvrpodcast.com. We're going to be talking about the finale for Mayor of Kingstown tomorrow with me, Heath, and Ando, so tune in for that. And Ando and Heath just dropped a special Patreon-only film list, which you can listen to if you go to patreon.com/DVR. If you liked us this year, if you liked our coverage, if you enjoyed listening, consider becoming a patron, even only for a month, or get in there, download all the past episodes, and listen to your heart's delight. And you'll hear many of the folks who are here today. Of course, Gina is here with me. And we have Matt back, who is the originator of Podcast Winterfell, the creator himself. And also, the aforementioned Heath Solo is here. We got four people to talk about.
Please use my correct name when I talk Podcast Winterfell.
I'm sorry. Heath Snowlow, the bastard podcaster, is here.
Thank you very much.
We're ready to get into this, so we'll start with Gina there. Gina, how you doing? How did you like the episode? How you feeling?
I'm doing great. I actually really liked the episode. I loved it upon rewatch. However, I think it was a great episode, but not necessarily a great finale. I feel like it would have been a great penultimate episode.
Yeah, that's that. I'm not going to disagree with you. Solo, how are you feeling?
Well, I was looking at my notes and I realized I took notes on Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. So hold on. Let me get in the character. See if I can channel my inner dragon. Oysters, clams, and cuckoos. Okay, I'm almost there. Thanks for having me. I was reluctant to come on, but I was knee deep prepared for this finale. I decided, of course, holding out to come on the finale, you know, how dare I, but I figured why not. I really liked this episode, but it was episode 8, right? And we have 9 and 10. That's the only issue I have. I thought if I was just rating the episode, I'd probably give it a 9, but if I'm rating a finale, 7.5, just because I just felt, and we'll talk about it today, I felt we got so much great character stuff that we really needed earlier, in my opinion. But having said that, I've really enjoyed this season. I've been following along with the pod, and I just felt that whether it was the powers that be at HBO Discovery or what, we really needed those next two episodes. Because I believe that in order to get this to Game of Thrones level, it's going to be hard, first of all. It's almost impossible with all the great books George wrote and everything and the source material. But you want people talking about it over the summer or over the next year. Oh, my God, it was so amazing. And bring people back, the 20 to 30% of viewers they lost. So I just thought they missed the boat there, but I'm excited about talking about the episode.
Nice. All right. Mr. Matt, welcome back. We had you for the first episode. Now we're here at the end. How you feeling?
I am exhausted by this season, without doubt. I feel like I'm a sausage on a spit, although not quite an egg on today.
Oh, Lord.
Oh,
and I have exploded already with all of the things that I've been doing this season. But I'm hearing Heath, and I'm hearing Gina, and I'm hearing you, Axel, and I think that that is all legitimate if you're grading the season. But I feel like, as an episode, this one is one of the best ones of the season. I don't look at it as to how it serves functionally. I just look at it as an episode to episode. I went well north of 9 out of 10 for my rating for this episode on Before the Dragon podcast. And the reason being is because it was such a quality of episode. I understand the order of things being done is a little off kilter to where we're compared to seeing, especially in most television these days. But I still just rate an episode as an episode, regardless, is it false? Now, if you want to ask me if it served the season well, no, I agree with you. It did not serve the season overall well, because it ended in a place that, you know, you get an 8-minute montage of things that are going to happen, but hey, you got to wait 2 years. You know, I'm not very happy about that, but I thought as an episode, it was brilliant.
Yeah. Well, I think we are definitely all in agreement on the feeling of fantastic episode that didn't serve the season well. I feel the same way. I was pumped. And as I said yesterday on Before the Dragon call-in show that Matt hosted, my wife turned to me when the montage was happening and said, "They don't have enough time to have a fight, do they?" I said, "I don't think so, honey. It's not happening." Nope. And it didn't happen. And I was kind of a little bit, but the more I thought about it and rewatching, what a great episode. It did get me pumped. We're all going to be here in 2 years, no matter what, right? But I like what you said, Heath, with you kind of have to think about, to me, it's like a weird business dichotomy, because we all know there's so many issues happening at Warner Brothers Discovery, and HBO is wrapped up into it, and they want this show to run longer. They want as many seasons as they can get. Hell, they wanted way more seasons of Game of Thrones, right? So they want that for their catalog, but then they're kind of limiting certain budgets for, so they have to kind of spread things out in a different way. So it's a catch-22. Either way, though, you still end up with amazing acting, production, CGI. Everything looked amazing. It felt amazing. So am I a little disappointed that there wasn't some big fight? Or, like, I think I might have said it yesterday, Matt, or maybe Heath, maybe you and I were talking about this, or it was me and Aaron or something, where I said it'd be kind of cool if they did, like, kind of like a Rocky, what was it, Rocky 2? Remember at the end when he punches Apollo and it freezes? Like, they're just about to punch each other? Like, if they had started a battle, like two dragons had been going, and then they just cut. That would have.
That's the end of Rocky III when they're sparring at the end, and they and the ding dong, and then they go to hit, and it ends.
That.
But
yeah, go ahead. So
Axel, what I will say, and I want to ask this too of Gina and Matt, because I know you, I believe you guys have read the book, right? Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Okay. Yes. So in my perspective, because I didn't read the book, as a, I want to know again once we go to book readers and show, because like my wife who hasn't read the book. She was waiting for this big battle. It didn't happen. She was disappointed at the end. For your common viewer who is just looking at as a season, that's where I think a lot of the fault and people will be disappointed. But if I'm just wondering if you guys as book readers, knowing what's going to happen, would you be more I mean, are you happier because you know what's going to happen and that you can wait because of that? I just want to see, because I feel like I'm getting both sides, where if you watch it all, say it's four seasons and you watch them all at once, you love this episode. I still think it was a great episode. And then you can go to the next episode and continue. But waiting two years is a big deal. So I just wanted to get book perspective of how did that change any of your what the hell is the word I'm looking for? Your inner dragon. Yeah, right. Perspective.
Matt, do you want to chime in first?
Well, I will say this. I am a book reader. I had no idea how they... I knew Rook's Rest was coming. I knew the fourth episode was coming. I had no idea how they were going to play it after that. And the fact that they went ahead and built this up, one of the things that Ryan Condal has said in some of the inside the episodes things and everything like that, that has helped me regardless of whether I've been a book reader or not. And I know a lot of people don't go and do the extra research and watch those things. So I don't know who he's talking to, but he spoke to me when he said, you know, the first season was laying the seeds. The second season is now we've had an incident. We're building towards war. And then he said the third season is going to be just all out war, which is pretty much how it plays out in the book as well, if showing where they divided up this season at. So I'm looking forward to the third season because not only am I looking forward to events from the book, but I'm also looking forward to, okay, well, if this is Ryan's plan all along, then he must have a heck of a season three planned for us. So that makes me enthusiastic about it, regardless of what the events are. How about you, Gina?
So, yeah, I mean, I read the book quite a long time ago. I haven't reread it, I think, since I started reading it when House of the Dragon first came out. But I have a digital copy and there are issues on my Kindle, so I didn't finish it. Mm. But I think that, you know, they're straying from the book a little bit in certain instances, which is fine with me because that I expect them to. It'd be a very dry series if they just... went by the book because it's written as a history, right? So they've been taking time to develop characters that are, you know, really just mentioned. All this stuff between Alicent and Rhaenyra doesn't happen in the book. Rhaena and this quest for her dragon doesn't happen in the book. It's kind of a different character that rides that wild dragon. So I think, you know, I would have liked to see some type of battle, I think, to end this season, but I don't think it makes it really any difference to me that I know what's going to happen. Like, there are some key events that are going to happen that I am waiting for. I was worried one was actually going to happen in the finale with Helena, but... you know, I'm ready for it to just kind of for them to let it rip next season. And I'm excited to see what happens. And I'm excited to have them introduce Daeron as an actual character. He's been talked about several times, but I want to see what this third son of Alicent's is like, you know, and what he's going to bring to the table. But yeah, I'm still excited for the third season. Yes, it's going to be a long wait. I wish they had made it feel a little bit more like finale, but I don't know that it where they ended it really changes anything for me. I'm glad it's going to be a full four seasons, though.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, I did listen to this a while ago, and then I through heavy and copious amounts of marijuana, I have destroyed all memory of this.
Oh, kids show.
This is my own
choice. Oh, wait, the kids smoke all the time. Sorry. Come
on. I live in Portland, solo. It's legal.
Does a dragon light those up for you?
Oh, I almost bought a dragon bong for my birthday, but I didn't.
Oh, my God.
But, you have to now.
I do.
Don't do drugs, kids. Come on. I do.
Just say yes. I do... remember that, like Matt is saying, and like Ryan Condal said, once shit basically starts going down, it things happen quite quickly. And I'm okay. I like that they're adding more character stuff. And so overall, I think you bring up a great point, Heath, which is something that we often talk about, which is we're watching this live, we're covering it week to week. A lot of people, probably the majority of people who end up seeing this in the next 5-10 years or whatever, they're just going to sit down and hit play, and it's going to take them exactly 3 seconds to get from the end of this episode to the start of the next season, right?
Yeah.
And maybe one thing is, maybe they're going to surprise us, and maybe the next season is going to be ready sooner than we think. Maybe that was kind of part of the plan. This is, you know, or it starts a kind of a groundswell, which gets us something a little quicker. But we're going to get the Hedge Knight, and, you know, we're going to get more A Song of Ice and Fire content. So overall, I think it's a question that we talk about now. But in the end, people are going to probably think, oh, that was kind of fun. I can't wait to hit play on the next episode, you know? And they'll get right into it. But let's get into this. Oh, go ahead, Gina.
I was just going to say, I'm thinking it will be more like a 2-year wait just because of all the dragon action we're going to see. And I want to say that the actress that played Rhaenys said she spent a month filming her stuff on the like mechanical dragon. So just for that episode. So I could imagine that, like, if we're going to see more dances of dragons, like, characters are going to be on their, you know, dragon broncos for like a good month plus filming stuff.
So it'll be just the next election.
Oh God!
No, not quite that
not
soon.
That long. Okay.
I mean, so but 4 years. 4 years.
I would say a solid 2 years. Like, I don't think we'll see it any sooner than that.
They're just now starting to write season 3, and I think they have plans to start filming late this fall, early this winter. That's the last rumor that I've heard. Nothing is confirmed, but you think about that, and you think 6 months to 8 months of filming, given the way that they do things, like the way Gina says, and then you're having to do post-production. And shoot, they were doing reshoots back in March of this year, you know.
Oh, wow.
So it all depends on the editing, you know, how that goes.
Mm-hmm. I think they still sometimes doing post-production while the show is airing. Like, they're still working on episode whatever.
For sure.
When the episode when episode 2 is already aired, you know? Yeah, it's interesting. Well, like I said, we're going to be here anyway, so it's interesting to talk about, but we're all...
Well, hopefully.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? We're all of the older generation, and we've waited years for shit before. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's okay. We can... It's going to be worth the wait, but let's dive into this episode. Let's see. Let's start with one of our guests. Matt, since you had me on yesterday and asked me where I wanted to start, why don't you start us out? Is there any certain character or scene or anything that you wanted to start talking about?
Well, I think I brought this up when you were on the fan call-in show, Axel, but it's my favorite subject. It's like, Helena, you go, girl. This girl is connected to everything. She's talking to Damon in his own vision. She's seeing everything that Aemon has done. She is absolutely fantastic. She doesn't like to be touched. Don't touch her. Don't touch her, Aemon. Don't even touch her, Alicent. She doesn't like to be touched. Just leave her alone. Leave her in her visions. I love this girl. I'm absolutely in love with this actress, Fia Sabin, who has done a magnificent job. And they've made so many great changes for this character as compared to the books. Because you don't get much about Helena after the whole blood and cheese thing happens. And I was dreading that. But now they've really strengthened this character, and I am absolutely loving it.
Yeah. She had some great stuff.
I really love her too. And I love the way they put her into Damon's vision, and she was seeing everything that I think he was seeing at the same time, just the way they cut it. Because when I was rewatching it, I'm like, wait, is she seeing this at the same time? Because I knew what was going to happen next. Mm-hmm. I'm like, she definitely is. And I just think that's an amazing power to have. And I loved her conversation with Aemond after that vision too. Yes. He's such a little snot, and she was just like, you don't get it. You're like, you're going to die. And whatever you do to me, nothing is going to change that. And I was just like, score.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Axel. Go ahead.
No, go, you can go. I was going to see if Solo or you had anything to say.
I'm glad Gina just mentioned she was talking to Eamon, because when you said Helena, for some reason, I thought that was like the witch or whatever at Aaron Hall. So I'm like, okay, all right, now I know who you're talking about. No, I agree. And one thing this episode did for me personally, because I've been on record saying I really don't like any of these characters and I'm struggling, and the ones I kind of like end up dying. But I feel like in the last few episodes, I don't know if it's the writing or the story itself or introducing some new different characters or giving other little characters more to do and we learn more. I just felt like the character development for me was really huge these last couple of episodes. And I'm really starting to get that fire in me a little bit of intrigue and with her as well, because I'm just her being in the vision and then talking, I'm just like, what is going on here? I'm like, it feels like Game of Thrones-ish, like we're there. It's not just history and conversations where I have to watch twice because I don't know what the hell they said. But I really feel like the show has made like a turn. And there's like now a half dozen characters I am so looking forward to, which we'll talk about in the podcast. But I just love what I'm seeing now and what is coming. And I guess part of the reason too, why I'm a little upset about the way it ended, because I needed more, because I finally felt the show hit me and was like, okay, here we go. I'm starting to like really, okay, that payoff was good. Okay. And so I think, I just hope in season 3, we don't get 4 episodes of just seeing Rhaenyra in her little castle. I hope it gets to stuff. I know it will, but no, I like the fact, Axel, that, there's so many lanes opening up, doors opening up, and to add that with All Out War definitely intrigues me.
Yeah, they did. Helena had some very good scenes and spoke up for herself and kind of woke up after too, because that was very traumatic regardless, right? Like she's obviously more sensitive than some of the other characters, and to have what happened to her, choosing which child to kill, right, in such a situation like that, then to kind of come back here and speak to Eamon like that, because you didn't know how she was going to react. I was kind of surprised, you know? I thought that he might be able to kind of pull her out of that room. I mean, first it's Alicent that stops him when he wants her to ride the dragon. But then when she has that kind of green seeing incident with Daemon and the tree and the weirwood and all that, it's like that kind of empowers her in some way. Like maybe she is more powerful now in general. She was able to take something from that experience. Because when she turns him, she's like, you burned him and all that shit. And then tells him he's gonna, what does she say to him? You'll disappear into the God's eye forever.
Never be seen again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that is so wonderful about the way that they've planted all of those little things before with Helena to me. Now you look back at those and you wonder, how much has she been experiencing all of that in this way before? Beast beneath the boards, all of those things, you know. It maybe her potential has expanded because of the trauma. We all know that's what happened to Bran in Game of Thrones, right? He fell. And that's when everything started happening for him. So trauma may definitely have a part of it. At the same time, now I look back at all those little sayings that she's had, they'll have to lose an eye, all of those things. And I just think, Is she actually living that right in that moment while she's looking at that bug? Is she even paying attention to the bug when she says that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was wondering too, because this is the first vision of hers we have been able to see. And it's like, it is a good question. Has it been like this all along? And I think it's an interesting moment to give the audience a look at what one of her visions looks like. And it's even more significant since it was shared with Damon.
Well, I guess the question it leaves me with is, if she has this ability, and I think we talked about this before, Gina, on some other episode, will they at some point, like, maybe Aemon is kind of pissed off. She challenged him, in a way, kind of threatened him with magic or whatever, right? Could he walk away? Is he smart enough for any of them to say, well, this is actually like gives us a strategic advantage because this is a powerful gift. And perhaps she can tell us what's going to happen in a battle, or we can somehow harness this. But I don't know if I see that happening.
I don't think Aemon is that shrewd. I don't think
he can control himself.
Yeah, I think he's... I don't think he would see it as an advantage. I think he's always had his very own way of thinking and operating and knows what he wants to do. And I don't think there's really anyone that can have too much of an influence over him straying from what he has in his mind.
Yeah. We reverted right back to that 7-year-old boy before he had Vhagar. As soon as he found out that he wasn't the most powerful dude on a dragon anymore.
I am the king. I'm telling mother.
I'm telling mother.
Speaking of that, I was just waiting for Alicent to slap him during that scene with Helena. I was just like, come on, pull a Cersei slaps Joffrey on this kid, but she didn't. And I was just kind of really bummed because that would have been something to see.
I was relieved because I don't think Aemon would have done as well with it as Joffrey did.
Well, probably not. Yeah, you're right about that, but it still would have been glorious.
Nobody
just give him a good hard slap. Come
on. No one does as good as Joffrey does in anything, Matt. You know
I'm
that.
I'm telling mother.
He is the king, the one and only. Something I found interesting, because my wife pointed this out to me. She pointed out, if you look at it from Daemon's side of the vision, Rhaenyra sits on the throne. If you listen to, what's her name, who we were just talking about, Helena, she says that Aegon is yet to have his victory, right? Mm-hmm. He'll sit on the throne, right? So that's...
A wooden throne.
He sits on a wooden throne. Oh, you have it in the notes. And you'll be dead. He's yet to see victory. That's interesting. Well, either way, I think it was kind of interesting that they covered us on both sides because they don't want to give away the ending. But they kind of covered it. You know what I'm saying? Like maybe sees it
one
way.
Wooden throne means coffin.
Oh.
Death.
Oh, that could be.
We shall see. We shall see.
On the other hand, maybe both versions are true. Maybe we'll see both versions occur.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah, we shall see. But that whole vision was very cool. What did you, Gina, we talked a little bit yesterday. What did you think about all the cool stuff we saw in the vision, like the White Walkers and Daenerys and all that kind of shit?
I think it was great. It's a nice throwback and tie to the Game of Thrones world that we know, which I love when they do that. And you see these interesting parallels that, you know, of course we know they're going to happen, but the people in you know, this time and place don't know they're going to happen. But I like that. Was it a convincing, I mean, I guess seeing Rhaenyra on the throne was enough of a convincing factor for Daemon to finally get what was happening. Mm-hmm. It seemed like, okay, we really had to spend 7 episodes at Harrenhal to finally get him to do this. It was a bit tedious. I think that's what my one kind of gripe about this whole season, but I like that they threw that in there as well. So I thought it was cool.
Solo, go ahead, Matt.
I'm sorry. No, Axel, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to ask Solo what he thought about Harren Hall, and was this a good ending for you to get this kind of vision?
Yeah, I was a little like, oh, here we go again. But when you think about it, in the grand scheme of things, if you put all the scenes together, it might be like an episode. So I'm like, would that have been good in just one episode? Probably not. I don't know. But I think the payoff was worth it. But the journey was a little, I think a couple of things shaved off to me. But it's, again, it's something I would have to rewatch and see now that it has come to this. But I did feel when he touched the tree and saw these visions and then, of course, bent the knee, which I'm sure we'll talk about, to Rhaenyra, it satisfied, okay, now I see where this journey was going. Yeah. The journey itself, maybe, but you know what? It's, you know, me and Gina weren't too crazy about it, but, you know, it wasn't terrible. It just was like, I'm one when someone's not in reality, especially in this show, and is having visions all the time, that just like, it frustrates me a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because for me, now that I'm starting to get invested in these characters, for me, this show was just about, seeing all the houses and seeing the families from 150 years ago, how they're everything, seeing the set pieces again. And just for me, it was just kind of enjoying being in the world again, but in more into the story versus the characters. But now with the end of this season, I feel it's starting to like get it for me. I'm really starting to get intrigued. And when I was on Before the Dragon in the off season, talking about the trailer with Matt, he asked me, you know, are you excited for this season? And I was like, kind of not really. But he kind of got me back into it. And then I listen to your pods and I start enjoying it again. But now, if you ask me that question in a year and a half from now, I'm going to be like, yes, give it to me now. Oh, yeah. Well, big dragon only. Give it to me. Okay. Sorry.
So the thing about the whole Daemon thing, and I'll just say this, is all season long, I was watching each episode with that going, again? and it was much like the same response that I had when Ramsay was torturing Theon. I was just yeah, we get it. You know, that's fine. We get it. Let's, you know, we don't have to go back there every episode. Well, you do, because you're giving Matt Smith a lot of money. So you gotta have him in your show. But at the same time, I was just kind of like, you know, this is getting really tiresome. I think the payoff was worth all of the pain, much in the same way that the payoff for Theon, when you saw him as Reek in season 4, made all of that pay off very well. Mm-hmm. So the vision was cool. It was a lot of stuff, and there's some stuff that may be pointing to things that you'll see in this story. And of course, a lot of things that connect back to Game of Thrones. My favorite shot was actually the one where the three-eyed raven was warging into a dire wolf coming up on the White Walkers.
Oh.
I just thought that was fantastic. So that was
what
the
do
thing
you think,
that
got me. Matt, what do you think that, you know, we saw someone's feet and then it was like the end of a battle or something. Do we know what that vision's from? Or
I got an idea, but I'm not going to say.
Okay. Fair enough.
I have a question for you, Matt. What do you think is the significance of Alice Rivers, was her name, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was she doing there? Was she there to help him have a vision quest, guiding him through it? Was she an agent of chaos? Gina had thought through the season she could even be like an agent of Larys to push Daemon away from Rhaenyra. Was she even there? What do you take of that character?
Yeah, well, I think that they slowly chipped away at some of that. Sorry. They slowly chipped away at some of that simply because you know, then there was finally a mention. Oh yeah, Alice Rivers went to see Lord Grover, and all these little things that kind of whittled away at the fact that she is just someone who is very connected to old magic. She keeps talking about how there are things that can't be changed, blah, 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 blah. And was her purpose to set Damon straight? Is that what she wanted? Is that why she was crying when she was sitting at his bed in this episode? Was because she knew that once he saw this vision that it, you know, he's going to lead this army away and it's going to be for Rhaenyra. And is that the point of it all? Or will she be sad that he's gone and still be causing problems at Harrenhal for other people? I think that's what we got to find out.
Mm, yeah, that's interesting. Ah, oh, a mystery.
Little Sarah McLachlan
a mystery,
building
yeah.
a mystery.
Yeah, because yeah, that was the thing for me is that what are we going to see her again? What's her significance? Who is she, what side was she on? It was just, it was the whole, you know, what I guess when rewatch the season, as I know I'll do, I'll maybe come up with some different ideas, but I was never able to kind of put her in a box, and maybe that's a good thing. You yeah. know? Maybe that's a good thing.
You so. Don't want to box Helena. So yeah, don't box her. I'm here all week. Try the fish and the quail.
I do think we'll more see birds. Her again, even if she doesn't look like her. Cause there was one scene, I think it was last week, Damon like walks into his room and there's like a goat there. I'm like, is that Alice?
Yeah.
You know, because I do think she shapeshifts as well.
Yeah. Now is she like a Melisandre Red Witch or that type of thing? Like. Or
it's open for debate.
Okay. I just wasn't
there's,
sure.
There's a, was... well, even in the books, Heath, I'll tell you that there are three different perspectives that are given on her, three different opinions, and they all differ. So it's up to the reader to decide what they want to believe about it.
Oh,
so,
I like that.
Yeah. I kind of like that.
Was she, Matt, refresh my memory because it's been a while. Was she the woman that was also kind of like a, knew the three-eyed raven at the time? There was a character that I feel like in one book it talked about there was a woman who was related to the three-eyed raven or like a cousin of his, and she seemed magical too. And I can't remember if it was in this book or another.
Well, let's see. The Duncan Egg thing happens about 100 years after this. So Alice would have to be pretty darn old. Not saying it's not possible.
Right. They
because one of the stories in the books makes it very possible.
They already think she might be more than 100 years old is kind of what I was
right.
thinking.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like it.
And at least yeah. she looks young. And I think she is the same Fun. Witch that potentially that Laris's father believe cursed him to be born with the club foot.
Oh.
And, you know, she's, doesn't look like, you know, I mean, she doesn't look that old. So I feel like she might be already hundreds of years old. Like,
yeah, this may be not unlike Melisandre. Maybe she's not the same type of person as Melisandre, but it may be a glamour.
Yes.
Okay.
Interesting. All right. Well, let's switch it up a bit. We've been talking about a lot of heavy stuff. Deep mythology.
I'm ready for some fun stuff.
Oh, yeah, let's get into some mud wrestling,
let's
man.
Let's get into some mud wrestling here.
This
folks.
Is my favorite. This is my new guy, Tywin Lannister. He's my guy.
You know, you could say, why were these scenes in this show? Well, you know what? I loved all of it. I thought it was fun. I thought he was fun. Gina, it's so funny that you say he looks like Ser Jorah because my wife said the same thing. She's like, he looks like, who was that really good looking guy who got the disease in Game of Thrones? And I was like, Ser Jorah friendzone, of course. He does.
Actually,
yeah.
To me, if you look at his IMDb picture, he looks like that French actor that was in Ocean's 11 and
I know
Ocean's
who you're
12.
Talking about. Yeah.
Okay,
Yep.
Vincent, not Vincent Gallo. I get those
Cassell?
Guys confused.
Is that
Vincent
is that
Cassell, I believe. Yeah. Yes. He kind of has that look.
He does a little,
In that picture, but he does have a little. my boy Ian Glenn, Jack Taylor, baby.
Well, I thought this whole thing was very fun. I mean, it does have a connection to, I thought it was interesting that after talking about the Stepstones and the Triarchy and all this shit for so long, that we actually kind of get to see them, right? And we get to see, and I, and there were some of the people, now not being a full-fledged book reader, but wasn't it kind of significant that some of the people had like blue hair, and isn't that something that comes from the books?
The Tairoshi have been known to have like dye their hair crazy colors. Yeah.
So I thought that was fun.
Book Dario Naharis had dyed hair as well. So
that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, the best line from this, how many wives do you have? I'm like, this is my dude, even though he's on the wrong side of maybe what I'm rooting for. I don't know. But I'm like, and I'm sorry. And what's the name of the new actress we saw who's going to jump on the ship with them and command the fleet?
Abigail Thorne is the actress. Her name is Shirako. That's it.
Mohar.
Shirako.
Yeah.
I'm excited about their, I don't know if it's going to be short lived, but their adventures possibly. I just felt it was a much needed, it just felt, of course, I'm going to say this like Game of Thrones ish, but it just like it broke it up. It broke it up. And it was really nice because I love like the Triarchy, like seeing all them and like, ooh, these are pirate, you know, and it just like, I just, again, I felt this episode opened up more to me as just a viewer. And I just loved, I mean, the mud rest. I mean, of course, I'm thinking about it as an actor being in that mud for like 4 days or however long it took them to shoot it. And I'm like, oh, my God. But it's so great.
Well, my biggest question, of course, is how many double L's are we going to have in Essos?
Double L's?
Little Lannisters.
That was on that was what I was going to ask. Is there like any legends or stories of, there's a lot of Lannisters over there, like did this tie into anything like that, or is this just a fun thing now?
To be perfectly honest, I haven't read World of Ice and Fire in a long time, and that would probably be the only text. You might know something else.
Well,
go ahead.
I don't remember if it's Thailand or not, but I do feel like I remember a story about a Lannister who sailed west in kind of the terms of what's west of Westeros, which I think that is the biggest opportunity, is Arya going west of Westeros and running into all these like, you know, kind of branch off families from Westeros wherever she lands. But I'm wondering if it's that guy. I watched this whole scene thinking, Tywin would be very disappointed in Thailand right now. He's a craft negotiator. And then I was thinking, oh, Tyrion would have loved this. And then it's like, what? You want him to fuck all your wives? How many wives you have? Tyrion would have definitely loved this.
I'm down. I'm down.
Yeah, that's true.
This would have been a great piece of the Lannister family history if it had been written down. And I just, and then even the point where Tywin says, you know, they might have my hand. The Prince Regent might have my hand for this.
And oh, geez.
Yeah, that's going to happen in the future to one of your relatives.
I didn't pick up on that.
I didn't pick up on that either. That's fantastic.
This was so fun. It was so fun.
And it's the pure commitment to it that they didn't just do, he gets there and talks a little bit. They did the whole mud wrestling thing. They did the whole banquet. Like they really, I just loved kind of the commitment to the bit,
and 100%.
It was wonderful.
Right to the end, Axel. I mean, here's a guy who's gone through all of this stuff that probably has a potential a whole bunch of seeds now over in Essos, and he's returning triumphantly with this fleet, getting rained straight in his face the whole time. I laughed my butt off. As serious as all that montage was, that was the moment where I went, yeah, That's Tylan's fate. Oh, that was that's and, the way it goes. Rain on you.
And we have a new song, right, for Ed Sheeran to sing later in life?
There you go.
Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah, that actor actually said he hated the singing much more than the mud wrestling bit.
I saw that. That
oh, that's great. Fun.
It was great. Yeah.
Oh, that it. God, and then talking about this with you guys makes me more excited. That's one of the things I do miss not podcasting about it. Is I start, you know, when you guys give me this little knowledge that I missed or something, and then it just I start getting excited again. So there thank you for go. That.
All right. Well, Solo, is there anything? I think you said something right. Did Gina get to pick something? Whose turn is it?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I kind of back channeled, but let's let Gina pick something special.
I'm thinking we need to talk about. Rhaenyra and Alicent. Is it okay if we jump there?
Let's do it.
Yeah. We could jump like Littlefinger, jumped around in season two. Yeah. So that's what we do.
Teleporting.
Yeah. Okay.
Teleportion.
I have been a Rhaenyra Alicent shipper for a while. And during this scene, I was like, kiss, kiss, kiss her. Yeah. I don't have expected Alicent to just like lay a big old fat kiss on Rhaenyra. But these two women have had two of the best scenes together all season, in my opinion. I loved the scene between them and the Sept. I loved this scene. I was not expecting Alicent to show up on Dragonstone when she was asking for
passage for more a while.
Passage again. I thought, oh, this is her getting, you know, Helena and the grandchild out. And so when she showed up, I was just like, oh boy. And, you know, I think last week we talked about her little spa trip into the woods and, you know, kind of looking up and how she, you know, had some kind of realizations about things. And I never anticipated that her realization, because this is definitely not in the book, her realization was to lend her old dear friend that she loved so much when they were girls, like give her the biggest gift possible to try and end this war so she can fade away into obscurity and just live a peaceful life. You know, the scene between them was just so amazing. Alicent's character is like, I finally know who I am after years of just doing what I was told to do and what I thought was right and what I thought I needed to do. She's like, this is what needs to be done and I'm ready to do it. And I just thought this was one of the most beautiful scenes of the season. And I love these two actors together. They really just complement each other so well. And this was kind of a jaw dropper for me. I was just so not expecting it. It was pretty wild. But I loved this scene. So that was my kind of, you know, big.
Yeah, Gina.
Yeah.
The two of them together sharing, I mean, Emma Darcy and Olivia Cooke, I mean, big fans of them. And just, it's so nice, at least because they're worlds apart, but we got at least two important, you know, heat diner scenes with our two, you know, and it really I wanted more, but I want to talk just a little bit, get everyone's opinion on Alicent, because I mean, think about the arc of her character, you know, set up to marry Varys at a young age and everything she's gone through. And it seems like, and then, you know, she gets in bed with Christian Cole, Gina's favorite side piece. I at one point, she was one of my favorite characters, and I still like her, but I feel like she's gone, unfortunately, way down, and just so much has been taken away from her now. And this is her desperate move to try for one last, and Rhaenyra won't give it to her, which I can't blame her at this point. It's like the past point of no return. I'm afraid of where she's headed, or I mean, where would she go, or what is she gonna do? And whether this plan, I mean, is it? I mean, is she planning something bigger? And which brings me to the question, I hope it's not too early to ask this. We see Otto in a cage. Was that, did Allison put him there or someone else? Or we don't know. I got confused there.
I heard a couple of theories on the Fan Call-In show that it might have been Laris himself who did that.
I'm thinking it was Laris. The longer Otto stays away, the more of a chance Laris has to be the new hand of Aegon.
Yeah, it may remember that it was Aemon who told Laris to contact Otto.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else could seem to find him. And right. Laris hasn't said anything else about it. This is the kind of the circumstantial evidence that people are putting together that maybe Laris is holding him. Meanwhile, Laris now has earned the trust of the actual king, and they're bolting out of town. And as it relates back to the Allison Rhaenyra conversation, what's going to happen when Allison has made this promise? And I don't blame Allison for making this promise. She's been kept out of the room as much as everybody else, right?
Yeah.
So she thinks that he is suffering, that it might actually be a mercy to kill her son as opposed to whatever. She has no idea about the physical therapy routine that Laris has been putting him through. And so it's a nice twist, but when you think about it, Rhaenyra and Allison kind of agree that she's going to open the gates for him and she's going to give Rhaenyra Aegon's head, which I think is asking too much. Send him to the wall. Don't take his head. And then what's Rhaenyra going to do when he's not there next season?
Yep.
Well, right. She can still claim the throne with him not being there.
True.
But it'll still be.
She'll automatically suspect that Allison had something to do with it, though, won't she?
Well, that's Allison. Maybe. Again, is working off of, she's a low information voter. She doesn't even know about the other dragons, right? Like, she's not her. The response we see from Laris taking Aegon out and everything is because of the many dragons that Rhaenyra now has, right? The response we see from Aemon is because of the dragons, the thing trying to get his sister to ride. But that's not where Allison is working from. I think she's working back from the end point that you talked about, Gina, which is she just wants to quiet this all, right?
And
it's not possible. Even though I wish in some ways that Rhaenyra said to her, of course, okay, let's try to do this, right? She's right. She can't, because they stepped into this and now they have to go. It's already started.
Yeah.
You know,
I do think Allison knows about the other dragons though, because that's when Aemon
conversation.
Comes in.
Okay. Aemon,
I was saying that, I was thinking perhaps, but that's not her.
Yeah.
That's not where she's coming from though. Right.
No, like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
It's not a strategic move that she's making at this point. And to give up her son too, I think after seeing the way that Aemon treated Helaena and realizing that, and maybe when she was on that river, she was like, I'm a shit mom. I have one good kid and that's by luck. And I have another good kid, but that's because I haven't seen him in 16 years.
Right.
You know, but if I can get away with 2 out of 4 and the other 2 go bye-bye, maybe that the world be a better place. It's interesting because we talked about it. I thought this might be a Cersei turn, but a real one where she turned to the 7 or they went through with that shit or something. But this was very interesting to me. So I found this whole thing interesting more so because of where Allison was at. It was pretty cool.
Well, and did you catch at the end of that conversation, Allison says to Rhaenyra, come with me.
Yeah.
Like is she trying to pull a Sir Criston Cole on Rhaenyra? Like, come with me and we can sail away with the orange trees and live out our days as little old ladies scissoring by the sea. I don't know.
She's not.
Is she that, I'm not going to say stupid, but is she that hopeful that can't happen.
I think she's so desperate that she's just dreaming of a potential life where it's all this horrible stuff doesn't exist, where her one son isn't a total psychopath trying to burn her other son with the dragon, and there's no war, and that, you know, she doesn't have to sleep with anyone she doesn't want to. And, you know, I think she just wants to get out of Dodge, you know, and
live a
peaceful life.
Yeah. You just reminded me of something, and forgive me if you guys touched upon it, but when Helena tells Aemon, like, I saw you burn our brother, Aegon, was that because she has these visions and stuff? Because I was like, she wasn't there. Okay.
I think so.
I got it now. Okay, because that was a important question I had. I'm like, wait a minute. Or did she have her own birds? But no, I think, okay, there's some... Ooh, the plot thickens. Nice. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, Allison is just fleeing reality at all costs right now. And she's, you know, and part of that fleeing reality is the fantasy of the friendship and the kinship that they used to have. Yeah. So,
and spa treatments will do that to you, Matt. You know, take me away.
The cold plunge always helps.
That is
the cold plunge.
Solo, you said it. That is what she's doing. Calgon, take me away. It's just a desperate act, you know? That's why I do think it's if you kind of juxtapose the two conversations where Rhaenyra comes to her, but not realizing she has no power. Right. And then in this one, she is just showing what little power she has in the fact that, as Matt said, even the deal they strike, she has no way to follow through with it because she doesn't even know that Aegon's already gone. You know what I mean? Like she's not really in touch with the power. So it's sad, actually. And it really... it's that desperate moment. Come with me. Let's go away together. We can be friends again and sit under the tree. And I can be shocked that you rip a page out of a book. You know?
And since that happened after her meeting with Daemon, Rhaenyra has no choice. Even if she wanted to at this point, she is now bound by the duty. I don't know if off screen, if Daemon told her anything else about the vision that he had. But she's been aware of the prophecy since the very first episode of this show.
Yeah.
So she's weighed with that duty. I even think that the whole reason she turned down Criston Cole was because of her duty to that prophecy.
Oh, yeah.
So, she's given up thing after thing after thing. And so this was just another thing. Not only that, but a thing with a woman who had totally betrayed her.
I know.
Yep.
It's sad. I know. I root for them too, but
this is the unrequited love story of this. It's the friendship between those two, really.
Yeah. Agreed.
Memories of a time we used to have. Solo. Do you have any memories?
I did it again.
You played with my heart.
Oh, no.
And not with my dragon. Okay.
What do you want to talk
about? Sorry, that one episode where Gina's talking about size of dragons and stuff, it's like stuck with me for like 2 weeks. I'm laughing my ass off. Right, anyway. Yeah, let's go down to our new boys, Hugh and Ulf. AKA Alf, AKA looks like Glenn Ewing, our friend Glenn Ewing. So interesting. I wish I had, Hugh's episode with, of course, training his dragon and everything. That was, I was like, God, all right. I love this guy. But I did expect him to like shut up Ulf a little bit, but he didn't. Probably, you know, is just trying to figure out everything. But I think with Ulf, is that his name? Ulf?
Ulf. Yeah.
Ulf. More birds,
Ulf,
please.
Oh, my God. Ulf, yes.
Well,
I think he's at the point where he's just trying to see what he can get out of all of this. He's pushing the boundaries. I mean, he's giving Jace a big hug and playing with his hair. He's got his feet on the table. He's asking. He's acting like an ass in front of royalty. But I think he's just trying to see, you know, hey, this shit's due to me now. I'm owed this. Let's see how far I can push it. Now, it may get him in trouble. Were you guys more like laughing when he was doing that thing with the birds and everything at the dinner? Or were you more like, oh, this dude's going to get his head freaking chopped off?
I'll say that last episode, the penultimate episode, Ulf was my absolute favorite dragon rider ever. That roller coaster ride over King's Landing was fantastic on Silverwing. This episode, what I'm seeing is a guy who doesn't know anything about royalty or court behavior, as he did point out to Jace, but he also doesn't care to learn. He's got a dragon now. And so, no, I did think it was funny, especially the little birds line and the way that he just kind of nonchalantly handled everything, even after he was told that Jace was prince early on when he had his feet up on the dragonstone on the table. But yeah, I just kind of got rubbed the wrong way. It was the biggest disappointment of the episode for me. It's like, oh, Ulf, why you got to be like that, man?
Yeah.
Right. I expected Hugh to like knock him off his chair or something.
Yeah.
Have some respect. Or like I was waiting for that Hugh moment.
Yeah. Hugh.
But
Hugh's dealing with his own anger issues, I think.
Yeah.
Right.
Losing his daughter and now his wife. And,
yep.
You know, he's got a I think it was his anger that actually drew Vermithor to him more so than anything else.
Yeah. That's a good point.
And
I think Hugh is also doesn't trust power.
Yes.
Right.
Like, he's been betrayed by it. Aegon was going to give him money. Yeah. He never got it. That's so, why his daughter died. Yeah.
So I think in a way he might be watching Ulf, really watching how Rhaenyra.
He's watching Alf on Monday night.
My grandmother loved Alf. Old Irish woman. She'd sit there, laugh her ass off. Oh, that little alien. He's so cute. Anyway, I think he's watching Rhaenyra to see how she's reacting to Ulf to say, oh, is she going to off with his head? How much does she need us, right? Like, because I think he's looking at the scales of power and seeing where they stand, right? Even though he is kind of like he's a little bit of a Boy Scout, right? He seems that way. So he's still going to be like, come on, that's the, you know, act proper a little bit, but he's not going to get too into it. I kind of enjoyed that. I like that. Because I thought they might go a little too far with a difference between them. You know what I mean? Where they'd go overboard with Hugh being Mr. like straight up and down, like stick up his ass, and Ulf being the silly one. But I like the way they kind of, I think it made Hugh a little smarter to me. But I liked how they were all around the table together, right? Like it was kind of like, hey, we're all having a meeting here. We're all riding dragons. That part was real fun. I like that.
Yeah, and as Ulf said, you know, as may have been mentioned already, but Ulf realizes the truth. Jace and Rhaenyra need to have a little bit of a sense of humor anymore. I mean, I understand that I understand that this is war and this is their livelihood and all of that stuff, but man, if you can't, you know, gleefully ask for little birds, what's life all about?
That's true.
Well, you know, if Joffrey was around and he acted like that, he'd be off with his head.
He would.
Right? Good
one. Oh, there we go.
I'm here.
No, he'd just say, I'm telling mother.
Oh, man. Well, he just had a lot of humor. Get it? Ha, ha, ha. That's even worse. We talked about this yesterday. Hey, Gina, do you think it's of any significance that the person that Rhaenyra chooses to ride with her is, what's his name? Is that Alan, or I get the two brothers?
Adam.
That she chooses Adam to ride with her? When she finds out, what was that little bit of news that she finds out they go and ride?
Oh,
off?
It was that Sir Simon sent.
Oh yes,
a note
yes
to her.
Yeah, that Daemon's going to do a bad thing.
Yep.
I think You know, is there significance? I think a little bit. I think Adam's been the most respectful. He bent the knee to her right away and said he would serve her. Yeah. And, you know, he comports himself, as she said, with, you know, I think the right level of respect. Even though she doesn't know, and Corliss still hasn't manned up to it, the fact that he's these guys' father.
What is he doing?
I don't know. It's like, let it rip, you know, just like cut out with it. But yeah, I mean, I think she trusts him the most. I think Jace has to stay behind because he's the crown prince, and you know, Bela needs to babysit him. And you know, the other two are, you know, I think she could potentially picked Hugh, but you know, I think she also wanted maybe to bring a dragon with her that would be recognizable to Daemon.
Daemon,
like
yeah.
he would have probably recognized others, but it might have been too big of a shock to be like, who read that?
Oh, good point. Yeah, I had not thought of that. That's a great point. Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. But then he would be like, wait a second.
I just thought she was comparing table manners, and that was why he got the, why he got the call. But maybe not. Yeah. I think you've got a good point there, Gina.
Well, it's kind of a fun. The whole scene was fun because it makes you think of like before the battle. Let's see, are we going to see this scene again, and the people are going to act differently, you know, because of whatever they've seen. You know, is Ulf going to go through some kind of battle and then not be laughing so much next time? You know, that's kind of interesting. I like that. Anything else you want to say about this solo?
No, I think we hit all the good points about Ulf and Hugh and the crew.
Yeah, Ulf and Hugh and the crew. I like that. What else we got? We talked a little bit about Corliss and Rhaenyra. That was a good scene.
Your favorite actor.
Oh, yeah.
Father.
Yep. Between
father. Do you want to talk about that scene, Axel?
Yeah. Oh, I thought you said, do you want to talk about that scene?
Yeah. No, do I want to talk about
that scene?
Like, oh, you, okay. Axel Foley of it was House.
You understood.
You understood.
Ew.
You
understood. I loved it. It was great. I think that Corliss did listen to him. Maybe he didn't give him what he wanted, but he listened to him. And I think that's progress.
I found it interesting that he didn't feel like he had a choice but to listen to him. And nobody talks to Corliss like that.
Yeah, 100%. I thought this scene was amazing. And just to go through the story of being alone and, you know, seeing other people with their fur and being warm by the fire. And it just like broke my heart. And I can't see any relationship happening after that, but it could be progress. Who knows? You know, things could change. But man, that scene really took me aback, and I appreciate Corliss not just listening and not fighting or not trying to make excuses. I thought that was important. The only problem I had was it's just to change your name of the boat to the Queen That Never Was is a lot of lettering to put on a boat. So
it is, dude. Seriously, that is the longest fucking name of a boat.
That's what he's got Adam and Alan for. I mean, he doesn't do it himself. He doesn't care.
That's a good point, Solo. Yeah, that's a good point.
Just, you know, well, because I was in Long Beach yesterday and looking at boats in the harbor and reading all the names. So when I watched the episode, I'm like, wait a minute, that would be a tough one to put on the. Anyway.
Nice. Gina, what did you think of this scene?
Well, I had written boring. I mean, it wasn't a boring scene, but I feel like the scene probably should have happened 3 episodes ago. And, you know, it was just like. Mm-hmm. And maybe boring's the wrong word for it. It's like, well, duh, they have to have this conversation at some point. I just didn't realize Alan was going to be so freaking bitter about it. I guess that's the difference between he and Adam, right? Mm-hmm. Adam was just my dad told me I did a good job, and I think Adam's probably a little more, willing to give family a chance.
Right. I thought that was cool. Cause it's like one brother is like, look, this was our life and that's his role and we're bastards. Oh, but now he likes me. I'm happy. And the other one's like, that motherfucker, he had cookies.
I know.
You know, like I think he'll get over it. He needs to get angry. He expressed his anger to daddy and then they'll have some adventures together and they'll
probably get killed together.
Yeah, exactly. They'll probably die. Or,
die. Game of Thrones. Saving each other.
What do you think's going to happen?
The queen who ever sank.
Yeah. Oh. There you go.
I'm just going to add a little devil's advocate here. I know it's a show and everything, and everyone's kind of like, okay, he spoke his piece, now move on. I don't think it's that simple. I don't think it's that freaking simple. Wow. Did you hear what he was saying?
He's like, I don't want your help at all. Leave me the fuck alone.
I mean, he's like, he's scarred for life. He was starving and freezing and had nobody. Yeah. And all of a sudden now, because of, his daddy wants to get back in your life. I mean, it's one thing. He saved his ass on the ship without, he did his job, but give the guy a break. So I don't know.
He would have done the same thing no matter who that captain was, is what I'm getting the feeling of.
That you know what? That's a great point. So, it just shows you the man he is. So I just wanted to.
Solo, are you in a way proposing, or I think from that, could it be possible that next time he doesn't save him or that he betrays him in some way?
I wasn't proposing that, but it's a good question because I think he wouldn't have saved him the last time. Now what's different is he expressed everything and they have more, I'm not going to say a relationship, but they're having dialogue. I don't think he would be the type of man to let him die. Yeah. I don't think so. No, but and I don't know. It's Game of Thrones, but I don't think so.
I agree, Keith. I think that Alan has proven that he has a lot of principles. Granted, all of his anger, and this is where anger comes from. It comes from your formative years as a child and so he's formed that way. He's not going to let that anger go, but that won't change what he feels is his sense of duty, which is why he did it in the first place. Saved him the first time around.
Well, speaking of duty, let's talk a little bit about Jace D. Vance and and Bela giving him the what to or what for, and telling him, wake up, motherfucker.
Wake up, Ahos.
Yeah, exactly. Like, wake up. Stop pouting and complaining and stand by your mother. Bitch. Yeah, exactly. I thought that was a quick little good scene, though, and she's awesome. I like her. I like more of her.
Yeah, Bela's awesome.
Yeah, well, this is the problem. And we all know this, but like during these times where, I mean, it's just a way because life expectancy isn't as long. I mean, these young children are thrown into these roles. I mean, there's no like, you can't go to like act. I mean, there's not a lot of activities really other than playing swords and stuff. But
there's Instagram or TikTok.
There's no Insta. And there's no podcasting about, oysters, clams and cockles or, the show. But, it just shows you. I mean, you have like these young people who are forced into these high positions and he's a freaking teenager, but it's amazing. And as we know, women will mature quicker than men, and maybe even our whole lives. A lot of us men are still kids, and women our wives have to keep us in line.
Hey, he's keep me out of your business there.
Except for you, Matt, because, but seriously, so at times where I want to get frustrated, but I'm like, the dude's like 15 or whatever, and his brother died. And so it's kind of like, I just like, man, imagine us being, I mean, granted it's different times and different,
planet
1,000 years ago, but or more, much more. But like, it's just like putting that in perspective. I go, damn, that's a lot of pressure.
It is. And, you know, in these books, and I guess even back in medieval times, as soon as you had the capability to reproduce, you were considered a man grown or a woman grown.
Right.
And thus those responsibilities, those same kind of responsibilities were thrown upon you. And that's a tough pill to swallow, because you still chronologically haven't had a chance to experience the same emotions that older people have had a chance to experience. And so you have to still learn how to grow with that. Just because of a title, you're not necessarily, well, we've seen multiple times in this series and in Game of Thrones and other series, just because you're given a title doesn't mean that you're ready for it. So,
yeah. Yeah.
But Bela put him straight.
This, yeah.
Yeah. Bela put him straight.
Yeah. Thank goodness. I like her.
Yeah. She's a rock star.
So we have talked about a lot of things, but one person who needed to be put straight, we got a quick little scene with Sir Criston Cole sniffing a, it was the sniffing of the, when I watch it, it's the just that he's sniffing the freaking thing and he saw his sister give it to him, right? That's what makes him, Gawain, get so upset about it, right?
Gawain.
Yeah. But the question is, where does Alicent keep that handkerchief?
Oh, my God.
You know, tucked in her corset?
In her shoes,
somewhere?
Maybe?
I saw her taking
You got the wrong. You got the wrong fetishes. That's hers.
Keep she's going up, up. Go up.
Right? She's charging double on OnlyFans for these guys.
Well, didn't she take it out of her breastplate?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I was only
But she could have had it somewhere else before that.
No, I was saying breastplate. I wasn't saying anywhere else. I was not implying that. Although, Kristen has plenty of experience in that area. So
that's true. He does.
You know?
He does. This whole, you had in the notes, like, what was up with this scene? I thought it was kind of interesting because it's just good to check in with this sad bastard every once in a while. And it was just a weird kind of scene, but it kind of sets the tone for that's their army, right?
Yeah.
Like these are the guys leading their army and this is the situation they're in. Like, okay. And going back to what we had talked about too, about, he says again, you had in the note, the dragons dance and men are like dust under their feet. And it reminds me of the dragon stepping on whoever it was. It doesn't matter whose side you're on.
Right.
Baker so
just smash somebody. Right.
Yeah. That kind of shows this was interesting to me, this scene, because it's like, I think we spent a lot of the season thinking, oh shit. Aegon's the king. They got the biggest dragon. They're going to kick ass. And now it's totally flipped. Right?
Well, and I don't think these guys know about the other dragons. Like, and that's how bad it is.
Oh,
right.
That's a good point.
I don't think they know about the other three dragons as it is. And I think seeing the dragons go at each other that first time, like, ruins Sir Criston. Yeah, like, he's just like, definitely. you don't understand, Alicent. Like, he's kind of, you know how when Jaime and the loot train episode happened and he goes back to Cersei, and he was more like angry and shocked than I think truly afraid. He was just like, you don't get it. I think this guy is just like, I'm so fucking depressed because these dragons are literally gonna be the death of me, and we will get to see you be Sir Crispy.
To be honest, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, that was my just little thing at that.
I gotta be honest, this particular scene is the most that I've liked Criston since I've known him.
Good point.
Yeah.
He was so frank about everything from, you know, what was going on with Alicent to what the duty, how well any of the Kingsguard might uphold their vow of chastity. I'm trying to mix those words up.
Their chow of fastity.
And exactly. and just the frankness of, you know, what do you do against a dragon? What do you really do?
Yeah.
You know, unless you have other dragons fighting for you too. So, I was as much a nihilistic kind of attitude as it was, I was just kind of like, wow, that's the first time I've seen this guy be as frank. You know, it almost resembled his name, the actor's name. He was so just open about all of it.
Yeah,
because
bear.
To say death would be a relief, that's, you know, get that guy some milk of the poppy quick.
Yeah,
right.
You know,
I mean, go ahead, Gina.
I was just going to say, he and Alicent seem to be in a very similar place emotionally, right? They're just like, mm-hmm. we just want this to end somehow, some way. Mm.
Yeah, he, great. Again, he was a character I know a lot of people were frustrated with by his choices and everything. And, you know, that one big moment of what he saw changed everything. And now we've only gotten like a scene here and there, but they've been all like worth it to me. Because like Matt said, I just, at first I'm like, okay, is he just shell shocked? It'll in a week or a fortnight, he'll be back to, you know, what he's doing. But then I was like, you know what? This really did affect him. And it'll be interesting to see going forward how he becomes. I mean, will he be still a really good fighter? Will he be more vulnerable? I mean, you know, what will happen? Will he just go off and say, screw this? I'm going to hang out with Aegon and skinny Liev Schreiber there, Loras. Laris. I love that dude. So, you know, again, stuff that felt like it was put on hold, but we really got this episode was a lot of these character developments and everything kind of coming together. And I said it 1,000 times this podcast. I'm very intrigued now. I really am. And I thought the show did a really good job finally getting us there. Granted, some of the journey hit or miss, but I mean, it's a quality show. I mean, everything, the acting's great. The spectacle is phenomenal. We're back in this world. And so I want to like him. Like at first I'm like, okay, that's someone I could like. And then I was like, oh, maybe not.
Yeah.
Okay. He's a baby or, you know, okay. But now, let's see. You know, he just might be on the wrong side. I don't know.
I still don't like him, but I liked him.
I liked him
a little better. Here's the thing, Heath. This season has done exactly what it was supposed to do. If it is setting up for big war stuff all through season 3, you're now invested in those characters. Yeah. You care about what happens to them. And now you're going to be destroyed by some of these things that happened in season 3.
However, Matt, Game of Thrones has taught me once the bastard Heath Snowlow loves someone, they die within 2 episodes. So, yeah,
so don't love anybody. Well,
so I'm not going to love anybody.
Don't open your heart, Solo.
don't look at any Targaryen family trees.
Yeah.
No. Well, see, that's what's tough for me. Is now that I'm intrigued and I got 2 years to wait, I'm like, do I or don't I?
You could be a book reader by the next time we talk, Solo. You never know.
And I'll still get the names freaking wrong.
We all do. Don't worry about it.
Like, I'm glad you said that guy's name was Simon. I called him Pete Townsend from The Who.
He is.
Loyal guy. He does look like Pete Townsend.
All right.
It is Pete Townsend.
Oh, gosh. Don't get fooled again.
One quick question. This is just Harrenhal. That's not the same place Arya and Tywin were.
Yep. Yeah.
It is. Okay. Yes. I thought so. Yep. I was just like, wait a minute. I know Harrenhal, of course, but I couldn't remember. And I'm like, yes. All right.
What was it? Was it season?
Season 2?
We spent a lot of time.
The Ghost of Harrenhal was the title of an episode.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. So again, for me, like this whole, I mean, I'm sure for everyone, but like, I love being at these places that we know of, you know, 200 years later or whatever. And it's just that part of it is really cool. I'm glad it wasn't something different. Now, they showed us the wall one time and I got super excited, but I realized that. Yes. Oh, this is the other question I have. With his vision, winter is coming, Daemon's. Now, is that what we saw in Game of Thrones, or was there another winter that came before then?
No, that's the one.
That one.
So we're not, we don't get one winter in 50 years.
No. Oh no, there'll be winters, but he just meant, the winter is coming.
Okay.
The same way that Kreegan did. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, we've kind of reached the end of.
Although I just want to get a couple sentences for our poor girl Reyna, who's still in the Eyrie,
yes,
hunting down that wild dragon of hers that she finally meets at the end. Like literally, it was like 20-second snippets of her planted throughout the show, which is kind of disappointing.
Dragon doesn't even like her, Gina. The dragon's screaming at her.
I mean, but is that a scream like, who the F are you? Or is it like, mommy, I've been waiting for you for years. Oh. Where have you been?
Oh, have to say.
By the way, we think the name of that dragon is Sheep Stealer, but I haven't seen confirmation of that yet.
So. Oh, speaking of Sheep Stealers, though, guys, Axel, don't we have Facebook?
Yes.
Comments to talk
we
about?
We do. We do. That was a good one, though, Gina, because I actually watched it and I said to my wife, I was like, did she get on? No, they just cut away pretty quick, didn't they? Like she just kind of gets up, sees the dragon, and then they cut away. But I kind of liked it.
That's just a way to torture book readers and say, well, are we going to get a certain character or not? Are we not?
We'll see.
That's exactly what that was about.
But Heath is right. We have, I'm sorry. Did you want to say something, Matt?
Oh, I was just going to say, this girl's abandoned her mission. She better get a dragon out of it.
I know.
Right. Well, she ain't getting those three eggs back. We know that. We do have some great Facebook feedback, which I will go through, and it's a good way to end it too. Melissa says, and these are all kind of, I asked a divisive finale. What are your thoughts? And Melissa says, I feel like this was just a teaser trailer for season 3. Not even though, cause no clips from it, just like watching the players on the board moving. Literally not one thing made me go, ooh, oh damn. Now Francine says, I loved it. My favorite was the intimate conversations between characters, Aegon and Laris, Sir Gawain Hightower and the darkly introspective Sir Criston Cole. Then the way Alan of Hull tells off Corlys for showing up and trying to be his benefactor daddy. Then the conversation between Rhaenyra and Alicent. Amazing acting, such an emotional scene. Amrit has a very distinct two-word review. Crap ending. Our old friend Janet says, I liked it the first time I watched it. I've liked it even more after a couple of rewatches. A lot of stuff for a lot of different characters crammed into this one episode. Suggestions of betrayals. There are conversations that needed to be had, especially between the two main female characters. There's an interesting dynamic developing between a male and female character that is completed with a favorite line for me, how many wives? I am looking forward to the next season very much to see how things go down. And the final comment from our man Brett sums it up very good. Very similar to the season 1 finale, basically a setup episode. To me, this show is not Game of Thrones. It's its own vibe, like Better Call Saul versus Breaking Bad. But it's consistently good, and I'm loving it. The biggest knock is having to wait 2 years between seasons. Yeah. That's it, right? If this show was coming back, if this was like June or May or something, right? And then the show was coming back in September, like kind of we all grew up with, if it was like Lost, like there's 3 or 4 months, big deal. But we know it's such a, the length does kind of put it into perspective. But overall, great episode, great talking to everyone. Is there anything that we forgot or anything that anyone wants to say before we go? I'll go around solo.
I'm excited for season 3 in a couple of 2 to 4 years when the 2028 Olympics are going on in LA. I'll be watching House of Dragons season 3. No, but great job by all of you guys and the special guests you've had on along the way talking about this. It definitely enhances my watching of the show, and I really look forward to listening. So thanks for having me on, and it was fun, and I'm excited. Now we just got to figure out what else we're going to watch.
Yes, Matt.
Yeah. Okay. So for you folks, I want you to just stop thinking of this as a season finale and start thinking of it as an Emmy reel for the 2025 awards. because there was so much great acting in this thing. That joke didn't land at all, did it?
It landed. It landed with me. I just didn't want to interrupt you.
No, I took it seriously.
No, I just didn't want to interrupt you because
I thought maybe I was like being too serious
right now.
I love this 100%. Episode. It's been an honor and a privilege. I think this is the first time Axel and Heath and I have been on a podcast together, especially talking about anything in the Game of Thrones universe in years, and the three of us at the same time.
Oh, wow.
So it's been an honor and a privilege to be among this excellent crew. I had a great time for the first episode. Gina, you always amaze me with your great stuff. Axel, you always bring it. Heath, I love your fresh point of views that I just, you know, wouldn't even conceive unless I'm looking at it, was looking at it through a TV only person. So I am.
Yeah, I'm Ulf. I'm the Ulf of the group.
No, you're not Ulf. No. You're not Ulf. You're brilliant, man. That's what I'm saying.
All right, Ulf and Hugh together, maybe.
So you're just an angry sot. That's
maybe that's not good. See, I don't know. I get a TV perspective.
I'm
Allison.
I love it. I love it because it makes me think about things in different ways. That's the point.
Yeah, that is because, you know, it's a little intimidating coming on when because you guys know so much about it. But I that's why I like to ask questions and like because it enhances my enjoyment of the show when you give me perspectives as well and fill in some of the blanks that I normally would have missed. So it's just rewarding all around for all of us. So thank you. That's very nice of you.
Well, I'm going to just close out by saying I'm going to put my antlers on and I'm going to retreat to the Isle of Faces, just like the gentleman who did the prep surgery for the tree at Harrenhal.
All right. Well, thank you, Matt. Thank you, Heath, for coming on. Thank you, Matt, for coming on. It's amazing. Gina.
Did you give Gina a lot? Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your mojo. I thought you were going to forget Gina. No, I'm not going to forget queen. Gina.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
Gina, any final words?
No, I mean, it's been a great season covering this. I can't believe it's already over. I guess I should go with 8 episodes versus 10. But no, I think we've had a great season. All our guests have been fantastic. I love that we've had, you know, the original daddy of podcast Winterfell, Matt, on a couple times. We had to have Snolo on, and I'm so glad he finally decided to join us because I was hearing like, oh, he's not that into it this season. I was like, what? So I'm glad we finally got you on. And
well, to be honest, you guys got me into it listening to you Before the Dragon and you and Axel and Ando and everybody and Bubba, of course. Joffrey a podcast, Bubba and Catfish. I mean, that beginning of we keep talking about, for some reason it just hit me more. I laugh every time because you want to know why? Because when he goes, I'm telling mother, ow, I feel like that's Bubba's voice at the end saying ow. So I think that's why I love it so much. But anyway, it's you guys that bring us together. So it makes it more enjoyable.
And it makes it fun to watch too. Like at the end of the episode the other night, I IM'd Bubba and I was like, are you having an existential crisis right now with this scene between Allison and Rhaenyra? And he was just like, I didn't even know what to make of this thing. It was really just kind of funny because I knew his like team green, team black thing. I'm like, I'm blowing up in your face right now, dude.
Team much darker green now.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, we've had a great season. Gina, it's been my pleasure to sit down here each week. And we thank Matt. We had Matt on the first one, then Jenny, Amy, Mike, Bubba, Andy, now Solo and Matt. Great to have a lot of people on. I've had a lot of fun. Maybe we'll be back I don't know. When's the Hedge Knight coming out? Like next
they
year?
They say 2025, but I'm guessing it's going to be more towards the end of 2025 based on the fact that I was shocked that they gave us 15 seconds of footage that they'd already shot and put it together in that coming soon thing that HBO always does. And then they said coming in 2025. So it won't be early in the year. It'll be much later in the year, but it should be great, man. That's some of my favorite novellas, man.
Yeah.
That's going to be very fun. Well, we'll be back for that. And you can, of course, check us out at dvrpodcast.com. Tomorrow we're going to record the finale for Mayor of Kingstown.
Yeah, baby.
Pretty soon we'll be talking some football on Around the Couch, more TV.
Yeah.
We'll get maybe we got to do a little reality check-in soon, Gina, too, because there's been a lot of good stuff coming.
Yeah.
Maybe
the next Housewives one that we watch, yeah. I don't know if that's New York or Bev Hills, but Jersey just wrapped up. There were a lot of finales Sunday.
Yeah.
Jersey, this, Mayor. Yeah. That's a lot. A
lot of finales. Things end, new things begin. We'll talk to you all soon. Thanks for listening. Peace out.